Welcome to Addressing Alaskans, a program capturing community conversations in South Central Alaska. Join us each week on KSKA Anchorage as we travel to different spots throughout our community to listen to local groups gathered to discuss what matters to Alaskans. This week, President of the National Gay and Lesbian Chamber of Commerce, Justin Nelson, hosted by the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce as part of their Make It Monday luncheon series, Mr. Nelson's talk entitled The Commerce of Diversity was recorded at the Dena'ina Center in Anchorage on October 14th.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce's Make It Monday Forum. This is a very, very special event for the Anchorage Chamber, and we're incredibly pleased and proud to bring you today's program. My name is Andrew Halcrow. I'm the president of the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce. Now I'd like to introduce the distinguished members at our head table. To my immediate right is Justin Nelson, president and co-founder of the National Gay and Lesbian Chamber of Commerce. Next to him, we have Bill Popp, president and CEO of the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation. And at the end of the table, we have Judith Crotty, who is the Vice President and Regional Community Development Manager of Wells Fargo Bank. Now, if I can invite to the microphone Bill Popp. Bill is the President and CEO of AEDC. They are the grassroots power behind Live, Work, Play, an initiative that was created by AEDC to make Anchorage the number one city in America by 2025. And that is part and parcel to our kickoff today, as the Anchorage Chamber has undertaken two areas of the Live, Work, Play. One is the talent, which is our work on improving public school outcomes, working with groups like United Way and NEA Alaska. And the second is our tolerance. And when we say tolerance, we mean the city's ability to integrate emerging cultures into our economy. And I think that's incredibly critical when you look at the aging workforce, an unemployment rate that's at 4.7, and a lot of employers that are shopping outside for labor. So with that, I'd like to introduce Bill Popp to say a couple of words about Live, Work, Play.
Thank you, Andrew. It's a pleasure to be here today. In 2009, I asked my board of directors to sit down and have a strategic visioning session. And in that process, we said, think big. Think about something that makes you sweat a little bit, makes you get a little queasy trying to achieve that. A big, hairy, audacious goal, or a BHAG. Little did I know that I would get a vision for my gigantic staff of six to make Anchorage the number one city in America to live, work, and play by 2025. But we said, okay, we're on it. Since then, we have rallied around us a phenomenal group of partners and people who have helped us to move this idea forward in ways that we never expected. We now have nearly 90 businesses, agencies, and nonprofit organizations who have signed memorandums of agreement partnering with us. We expect to have nearly 200 at the rate that we are going by the end of this year. I have a staff member whose job it is to see that that happens. So she's out there. Archana is our Live, Work, Play director. Archana, would you just stand up for a moment, because I want everybody to see you so that they can inundate you afterwards. Thank you, Archana. We have a phenomenal staff working in partnership with the staffs of many different organizations. We have done a tremendous amount of work, including developing a grassroots-based narrative, an aspirational narrative, describing what Anchorage thinks Anchorage wants to be the best possible Anchorage it can be by 2025. We've set up a set of metrics which are undergoing some additions and a few revisions. Right now there are 33 of them. By the time we hit our January luncheon, it'll probably be closer to 40 different metrics that analyze quantitatively the different elements of live, work, and play and how they interact with that narrative. And we have gathered around a large group of different organizations and entities who've been willing to come together and help us to identify our six areas of focus, and I'd like to wrap up by going through those areas of focus just to give you a sense of what it is that we are currently collaborating on. We're working on education as an area of focus. Our first effort in that part is to partner strongly with the United Way effort of 90% by 2020. We are working on housing, working with Cook Inlet Housing Authority, with several local realtors, with the Anchorage Community Development Authority, looking at the issues of the availability of workforce affordable housing and the cost overall of housing in our community as an element that could become a barrier to growth in terms of workforce and population and the overall economy in the coming years. We are focused on workplace well-being, which sounds very group huggish, but what it is it's all about making sure that we are providing quality health care, quality services, and a quality environment for our workers in our many businesses in town and their families, with an eye towards driving down the cost of health care through reduced consumption. We are looking at community safety, working with the Anchorage Police Department as one of our Memorandum of Agreement signatories and several other groups that want to focus on how we can make our community even safer. We are working with Big Wild Trails. I have to read this one because it's just a brilliant description. Brings economic vitality to the community by revitalizing neighborhoods through increased property values and enhanced quality of life through better parks and better trails. Very excited about that effort. Creative placemaking. This one is one that's generating a lot of energy, probably one of our most active groups. Strategically shaping the physical and social character of Anchorage around arts and cultural activities, including local fairs, festivals, and other events. If you saw the amazing event at the Anchorage Museum, the Light Brigade did a phenomenal job. That was our first outing in partnership in terms of promoting creative placemaking, making arts part of the fabric of our business community, because there is a lot to be gained from the arts. Those are the major areas of focus that we are working on. Again, we have nearly 90 partners. We're looking for more. If you're interested in signing a memorandum of agreement or considering it with your business, your agency, or your community group, please see Archana. She will be more than happy to get you hooked up. You can also find out more about the Live, Work, Play effort through our website, aedcweb.com. I want to thank Andrew for all of the hard work that he and the Anchorage Chamber are doing in partnership with AEDC on the Live, Work, Play effort. We're going to hit it, folks. We're going to be number one by 2025. Thank you all.
Before we get to Justin, U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski had committed to being here, but as you'll see from her video, there is a reason why she is not. So if we could...
Good afternoon to all of you attending today's Make It Monday event sponsored by the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce. I'd like to first thank your president, my friend, Andrew Halcrow, and your vice president, J.J. Harrier, for allowing me to share a few remarks with you today. I'd also like to welcome your guest speaker, Justin Nelson, who is president of the National Gay and Lesbian Chamber of Commerce, and to thank him for traveling to our great state to address the important topic of diversity in the workplace. Now, Andrew had asked me months ago to put this luncheon on my schedule, which I did, but what I could not predict at the time was a government shutdown. So I am truly sorry that I can't be with you in person, but I thank you for the opportunity to just share a few remarks on this very important topic. Diversity in our community is appreciated more and more, not just for the intangible benefits, but also for the economic advantages that it brings. As Alaskans, we know diversity. Our state and our communities are some of the most culturally and racially diverse in the country. Mountain View, there in Anchorage, is in fact the most diverse neighborhood in the whole country. That's a statistic that just shocks so many people. In the Anchorage School District, another example, the elementary school that my boys attended, more than 50 languages were spoken in their school, in our neighborhood school. And throughout the Anchorage School District itself, more than 90 different languages are spoken among our students and their families. What fabulous opportunities that this presents. But we also recognize that this wide diversity can present challenges, whether ensuring that we have sufficient ESL classes for our students, how our teachers are able to communicate with parents who might not speak English well, or how we can best integrate the amazingly diverse cultures and traditions within our neighborhood schools. We must recognize these differences while promoting policies to do so respectfully and in a non-discriminatory way to fully strengthen us and provide new opportunities. This must be done in our schools and most certainly our workplaces. That's why, in part, I supported moving the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, or ENDA, out of the Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee earlier this summer. This bill, if it's to be enacted, would close a loophole that exists in our employment anti-discrimination laws. Since 1964, the law has prohibited workplace discrimination for many classes of individuals. Employment practices based not on one's merits or qualifications, but on the sole basis of factors such as race, ethnicity, national origin, religion, age, disability, and sex. However, protection against discrimination on the basis of sex does not apply to those in the LGBT community. So ENDA, the legislation that we're talking about here, helps to bridge that gap. I support this bill. I support this legislation because I am a strong believer that individuals should be judged on whether or not they can do the job and not how they look or are perceived. Discrimination should never be tolerated in the workplace. It's just that simple. Now, Alaska's changing demographics presents other challenges as well. For some time, for example, we have recognized an aging population outpacing our younger generations. So how do we attract and retain our best and our brightest? Well, one way is workplace policies that promote positive work environments. For instance, a workplace that has family leave policies that also respect the non-traditional family. These are important because there's more to a job than just a salary. It's the whole package that attracts and retains employees. In Anchorage, especially with recent unemployment rates as low as 4.3%, such policies can be a real competitive advantage. So that's something to think about. Anchorage is a vibrant, growing city made even richer by the diversity of those who are attracted here. Our challenge, and specifically a challenge to those of you in the chamber, is to make sure that our workplaces are as inviting and welcoming as the land itself. And we do that by showing respect to all, regardless of race, ethnicity, religion, age, disability, or sexual orientation. Discrimination in any form has no place in our spaces. Again, my thanks to the Chamber for taking up this very important issue. We'll figure out things here in Washington, D.C., and I'll be back home soon enough to talk about these and all the things that matter so much to us in Anchorage, in Alaska, and to the Chamber. Thanks so much.
Now to our keynote speaker. Justin Nelson is the co-founder and president of the National Gay and Lesbian Chamber of Commerce. He has a background in small business and issues advocacy to help build a national organization that has given a much-needed economic identity to the LGBT community. Since its inception in 2002, the organization has grown to be the largest GLBT economic advocacy and business development organization in the world. Prior to launching the NGLCC, Justin was the Director of Federal Affairs and External Relations for the American Academy of Ophthalmology in Washington, D.C. He lobbied in Congress and the White House. Justin spent 5 years as an aide in the United States Senate during his time on Capitol Hill. Justin worked on issues ranging from small business, labor and trade, to healthcare, travel, and tourism. For their efforts in establishing the NGLCC, Justin and his co-founder were named in December 2002 to Out Magazine's top 100 greatest gay success stories. Ladies and gentlemen, as the president of the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce, it is my pleasure and honor to welcome today's presenter, Mr. Justin Nelson.
Well, thank you, Andrew, for that introduction. And Bill and Judith, it's a pleasure to share the table with you as well. Thanks to the board of the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce, and also to the members of the State Assembly that are here. I appreciate that. And to all of you that have come out to hear what I hope you'll find is an interesting topic. I have to tell you, the video from Senator Murkowski is it's hitting me in the right way. You know, I moved to Washington almost 20 years ago and worked on the Hill for U.S. Senator Craig Thomas from Wyoming. And at the time, Senator Murkowski's father was in the Senate. And I can tell you that neither my boss or many members of the Republican Party were in the place to influence people the way that Senator Murkowski is. And her words mean so much to me. And I can tell you, the mess that's there right now, I am much happier that I am in Anchorage and not at home in Washington. So I really appreciate her doing that video and the work that she and your other senator are doing for us in Washington. When I was first asked to come and talk about the LGBT business movement or the business case for equality, you know, I wondered what it would be like in Anchorage. I grew up in Wyoming, and I know nothing's like Alaska, so I'm not comparing us to Alaska, but I do happen to know what it's like to come from a fairly conservative place in the country, sort of live and let live, you know, don't tread on me, and just a real sort of libertarian background. And I'd always wanted to come up here, so it wasn't a difficult decision. So I want to just start out by asking a couple of questions, and hope I don't put anyone on the spot or embarrass anyone, but I'm going to ask them anyway. So raise your hand if you know a gay person. Okay, raise your hand if you don't know a gay person. Okay, great. Well, I don't have to introduce myself, so everyone knows a gay person. Great. We're off to a good start here. So we founded NGLCC a little over 10 years ago with the help of companies like Wells Fargo, our second founding partner, and we couldn't have done it without them. But we did this because we needed an economic identity. And as I mentioned, when I worked up on the Hill for Senator Thomas, when we were talking about legislation, he'd always ask three questions. What does the U.S. Chamber of Commerce think? What does the National Federation of Independent Business think? And what does the U.S. Hispanic Chamber of Commerce think? And why the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce? Because they had given an economic identity to their community. It mattered. It wasn't just a group. It wasn't just a minority. It was an economic community. We didn't have that. We had a lot of great social justice advocacy organizations that were fighting for equal rights, but nobody was fighting for bread and butter, what I like to call the ma and ma and the pa and pa shops that were out there, or even identifying the fact that, you know, we were business owners. We are corporate employees. We are vice presidents of companies. These things weren't really known. You know, everyone sort of thought of the gay people as this mystical unicorn that you hear about or that live on the coasts. You know, the census proved that LGBT people, same-sex couples, are in 99% of the counties in the United States. And I've met people here in Anchorage, so I know this is not the county where they're not. I don't know where we're not, but it's not here. And so we set out on this adventure to give an economic identity to the LGBT community with the help of major corporations. And I think probably to get to the meat of what I want to talk about, I just want to show a brief video that talks a little bit about the work that we do. And then I want to come back and share with you all the business case for why diversity, inclusion, and non-discrimination is important to the people in this room. So just indulge me, if you will, for a couple of minutes here for this brief video.
I remember about 10 years ago, prior to the creation of NGLCC, I was talking to my supplier diversity people and asking, why don't we include LGBT suppliers? And the one answer that they consistently responded was that we don't have a third-party independent organization that certifies businesses. So to have that organization now is wonderful.
My first year, I was able to obtain a contract from a large company that was part of the chamber. Year two, I had a second, and year four, I had a third. So although it's only three contracts, they're large contracts, and each one of them took quite a while to maneuver through, but it's been enormously successful.
We talked about all the great business that would come to people who engage in our program. And now, many years down the road, they're telling that story back to us. They're saying, this is what's happening. This has been my experience. This is the business I've gained. These are the strategic relationships I've made. That is incredibly gratifying.
I love that I can expect innovation, excellence, professionalism, and guidance to help us help our members to grow their own businesses so that everybody benefits.
Ingrid and I could not do what we do and be successful without NGLCC. NGLCC is breaking down barriers and is exceeding expectations and helping small business owners like us.
I've come to expect a lot from the NGLCC, in part because it's a business, and it is a business partnership. And as part of that business partnership, I think that we are always looking to see how can we expand, how can we improve, and how can we help others bring their best game.
Becoming a board member for me there was never any question about doing that. It's actually a great honor for me. Being here since the inception, I really feel like NGLCC is my baby, and I look forward to many, many years of participation and really leaving a legacy of supplier diversity for LGBT businesses for the years to come.
As we celebrate the last 10 years and look forward to the next decade, we remain committed to our core values of retaining, cultivating, and growing certified LGBT business enterprises by providing innovative, impactful on-site and virtual programming from the newly opened NGLCC Supplier Innovation Center and consistent, engaging communications on the redesigned website. Not only will we continue to work with corporate America and federal agencies to open up procurement opportunities for our certified businesses, but we will also continue to expand our work internationally to meet the needs of our multinational corporate partners and to facilitate export opportunities for our businesses. Now is a great time to be a part of the NGLCC community.
And the credibility that the NGLCC gives us is tremendous traction for people to partner with us.
You're without the NGLCC, and the staff always has a way of upping the bar and exceeding everyone's expectations. So I think throughout the years, the one thing
that time has passed, and this 10th year anniversary marks a really great.
That video was made for our 10 year anniversary that we just celebrated in November, and now I've shown you my radical gay agenda. And it's to empower business owners, it's to make connections, it's to create economies and empower communities. And we've been doing it for the last 10 years. And it's quite exciting because when you cast aside some of the misconceptions or flat-out mistruths about who LGBT people are, you get to the heart of something that we all understand, and that's commerce. And that's why the One Anchorage, One Economy, why the Live, Work, Play program, why they're important, because it's taking a look at who we are as individuals, who we are as businesses, and the impact that we can have on the economy, not only here in Anchorage or across the state, but really across the country. And as you saw from the video, we're expanding internationally now. You know, I always get asked, not always, but I've been asked, that was actually the last time was at a House Small Business Committee roundtable, and there were members of the staff from the majority and the minority. And I remember a majority staff member leaned over to me and said, you know, why do the gays need a Chamber of Commerce? And I said, well, you know, why do women, why do African Americans, why do Hispanics, why does anybody need a Chamber of Commerce? Because it's about business. It's about creating business opportunities. And the look on this young staffer's face was almost one of horror, because I think what was clicking in his head was, oh my God, I think they got it. I think they understand the one thing that everybody understands, and that's economics. You know, I have a good friend who's the chief diversity officer for SC Johnson named Maria Campbell, and I've known her for about a decade now. And she said this to me early on. You know, there are always going to be arguments, cultural arguments. Some people may not get black or white or gay or straight, but everybody gets the green. It is our one universal color that we all understand. Everybody gets the green. And I often talk about diversity, meaning also diversifying your revenue stream. If you are only going after the same kind of client every single time, you're missing out on the vast majority of the population. If you're only going after blonde-haired, blue-eyed, middle-aged men, you're missing out on a lot of diversity outside of that. And so what this taught me was that we had a real opportunity to tell the story about the LGBT community in a way that it hadn't been heard. And some people say, well, why do you have to bring your sexual orientation to the office? Who cares? I don't have to. But when I can be fired for it, it becomes a little bit of an issue. But if you think about this, each and every one of us, whether we're gay or straight or somewhere in between, brings our sexual orientation along with us. So just think about this. Do you have on your desk in your office a picture of your husband or wife? Do you talk on Monday morning about the fishing trip you took or what you may have done for your anniversary? These are ways that you're coming out as a straight person, for example. And so to think that by pushing for a workplace free of discrimination is somehow bringing sexual orientation to the office, it's really not. It's about ensuring that we're bringing the best of who we are to the office. Think about this. The average LGBT employee spends between 10 and 25% of his or her work week worrying about being discriminated against or being fired because they're gay or lesbian. So 10 to 25%. I mentioned this at the conference this weekend, at the Identity Conference. As a social justice advocate, I find that absolutely horrible. It is horrible. But as a businessman, I think it's even worse, because that means that 10 to 25% of that employee's productivity is out the window every week, and that impacts my bottom line. And that in and of itself, if no other reason, is enough to realize that we shouldn't have workplaces where we have any of our employees worrying about discrimination or being fired. We should be having our workplaces full of people that are there, that feel valued, that want to be a part of the project, that want to help grow revenues, that want to help increase our footprint. We shouldn't have them worried about whether or not they're going to have a job come Monday. Judith mentioned it. Last year, $790 billion in consumer spending power. By the end of next year, that'll be $880 billion in consumer spending power for the LGBT community. That's second only to African American and Hispanic communities. It's more than Native American, more than Asian American, and it's not a contest, but it's just to show you on a graph where it is. And these are self-identified adults, 18 years of age and older. Other communities, it's measured in life to death. I want you to think about this. That is larger than every economy in the world except for the top 19. If LGBT people had our own country, and as I mentioned on Saturday, it would be a fabulous country. It would be wonderful and sunshine and rainbows and unicorns. But we would be the 20th largest economy in the world. Would you not do business with the 20th largest economy in the world if it meant increasing your revenues, if it meant increasing your footprint, if it meant finding the right kinds of candidates to come into a job market that, you know, continues to have fewer and fewer employees for more and more jobs? I don't think so. And it's even happening. I mean, you know, oil and gas is the number one economic driver in your state. It was in my home state. You know, we have two of your largest companies that partner with us, Shell and Chevron. Both of those companies understand that non-discrimination breeds an effective workplace, that non-discrimination in a supply chain, that reaching out and buying back and investing in that community brings in customers. 89% of gay men, 91% of lesbians will make a choice when purchasing a product based on a corporate's policies towards the LGBT community. So 16 to 20 million Americans, not to mention those moms like mine that would, you know, dive on a landmine for me, but 16 to 20 million Americans, our family and our friends, that we're educating about companies that are inclusive, a place where I'm not going to be fired, I'm going to be recognized for the work that I do. Merits and qualifications, as Senator Murkowski said. That's how we should measure things. Not on whether or not my partner happens to be male or female. In fact, we're in a grant process right now. We're about to receive a sizable federal grant. I hope I'm not jinxing it. I don't think I am. But it's to do our international expansion. And one of the things that we have to institute is timekeeping in the office. And not like for the attorneys in the office, it's not, you know, billing by the quarterly hour, but we do have to keep time for everyone that's working on this project to be able to be within the guidelines of our federal grant. Well, I'm keeping time between 9 and 5. What my employees do between 5 and 9 is really none of my business, and I shouldn't be bringing that into the office as an indicator of whether or not they're qualified to maintain their job. I hope they're doing something fun. I hope they're able to have relationships with people that they care about, and I hope that they're, you know, not doing anything that is threatening to the reputation of the organization. I guess in that regard, you know, maybe we have a little bit of wiggle room. But the bottom line is, we should be concerned with what we're doing from 9 to 5, not from 5 to 9. So, give you a couple of statistics. You can take them for what they're worth, but I think they're important. 25% of same-sex couples, remember 99% of counties, that's where we are. 25% of those same-sex couples are raising children. So if you are Walmart and you're selling diapers, you're Barnes & Noble and you're selling children's books, you're ConocoPhillips and you're filling up cars and station wagons, this is an important demographic for you. By 2020, approximately 5.7 million, or 25% of the LGBT community, will be 50 years old. So we also have an aging population. There's this myth of gay wealth. They think that that gay people have more money. We don't necessarily have more money. In fact, on average, gay men and lesbians earn slightly less than our heterosexual counterparts. But how we spend that money is different. People call it dink, dual income, no kids. But let's remember the 25% of same-sex couples that do have children. But what this says is that we do have disposable income. So if you are in an industry, tourism, for example, 84% of gay people have a passport. 34% of straight people have a passport. You know, Alaska is a beautiful state. It's a great state to come visit. I want to come back in the spring, the summer, when I can do some fishing and get out and really enjoy it. The LGBT community is responsible for a full 10%, $85 billion of the U.S. travel market. If you're in the travel and tourism industry here in Anchorage, don't you want your piece of that tourism pie? And do you really care if it's me and my partner or me and my wife, me and my husband that come and patronize your shop or your restaurant? Probably not. So I think the point I'm trying to make here is that as gay men, lesbian, bisexual, transgender people, we're a lot more like you than we are opposite. And if we sort of shed away some of the misconceptions and full-out mistruths about who gay people are, you'll find that we are the corner store owner, we are the bank vice president, we are a vibrant part of this economic engine that makes the U.S. economy run. I pay the same taxes as everybody else. In fact, sometimes I pay more. As it stands right now, if you're a corporation that offers domestic partner benefits, and I have my partner on my benefits, and I'm in a state where we can't get married legally, then I'm paying additional income tax on his health care. That just seems a little bit odd to me. Now, if we are, thankfully, as a result of the Supreme Court case and as a result of what the IRS and the Department of Treasury have done, if we are legally married, regardless of where we live, that's no longer an issue. But there's still a patchwork of inequality out there when it comes to this issue. So the important thing to think about here is $880 billion in consumer spending power, 16 to 20 million customers in the United States. The ability to bring to the office your best game, the ability to live free of discrimination. And these are not, I don't think these are radical ideas. And I can tell you, as a proud gay man that grew up in Wyoming with a father in oil and gas, a mother in, had a small business, grew up hunting, fishing, camping, playing sports, sort of that jerk jock guy, it darn sure wasn't nurture. You know, this is who I am. I could have no easier been, had control over what color eyes or what color hair I have. That's who I am. I'm a gay man. I'm proud about it. My mom is maybe even a little more proud of it than I am today. But we're here. We're in your community. We're the business next door. We're the guy in the cubicle that's just waiting for someone to say, you know what? It's okay. You don't have to keep talking about this ominous person that you spend your time with. We want you to be who you are. We want you to bring all of who you are to the office. We want to include you in the vision of our company. We want to include you in what we're doing to move our economy forward. We want to include you in how we live, work, and play. We want to encourage you to be a part of one Anchorage and one economy, because it shouldn't matter. Discrimination shouldn't be a part of this. What should matter is that we are human, that we are hard workers, that we care passionately about the work that we do and the people that we love. And given a chance, LGBT people are going to help make a big difference towards that vision of making Anchorage the best place to live, work, and play by 2025. And I'll close by saying this. If you will all work with us on this non-discrimination thing and getting this across the finish line, whether it's encouraging it in Washington, working on it business by business, brick by brick, or working it through the city council or state legislature, you have my vote to help make you that by 2025. So thank you all for indulging me to share a little bit about the LGBT community, a little bit about our economic impact, and a little bit about what we do at NGLCC. You have a remarkable city, and I'm honored to be here, honored to be invited, and I hope I get a chance to talk a little bit with each of you before the end of the day. So thank you very much, Andrew, for the invitation.
You are listening to Addressing Alaskans with Justin Nelson, president of the National Gay and Lesbian Chamber of Commerce. His talk entitled The Commerce of Diversity was recorded at the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce on October 14th. Members of the head table, Bill Popp, who is president of the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation, and Judith Crotty, vice president and regional community development manager for Wells Fargo Bank, joined Mr. Nelson in responding to questions submitted by audience members.
How do mid-sized companies develop inclusivity policies at the office, and what would be the process?
Well, I think that's a great question. I mean, a lot of small and medium-sized companies don't have a full-time HR department that's working on, you know, cranking out policies for the organization. A quick answer to that, if you go to nglcc.org or you email myself or Sam McClure, Sam, will you stand up? Give us a card. Sam is our Director of Affiliate Relations and External Affairs. NGLCC and the Human Rights Campaign put together a small business resource toolkit that puts all of those policies right into one place that an SME can implement without having to start from scratch.
Okay. And Justin, this touches on one we talked about earlier. How can we separate the efforts of the local chamber and your organization from the negative ads and awful behavior of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce?
think we could write a book on that, or maybe read one. I'm not sure which. You know, I think the bottom line is you've got to know your local chamber. And Andrew and I were talking about this. It's not my job to speak on behalf of the U.S. Chamber. We do work with him on some policy issues. I think if you here in Anchorage know the work that the chamber's doing, that's probably the best way of looking at that issue. I think it's, you know, making sure that you're telling the story here, that you are holding Andrew and the team there accountable for the agenda that you're collectively setting, and that you're a part of the dialogue. And if you do hear about things that, you know, that are questionable, I think that you have the right to ask those questions. And, you know, as a chamber leader, we have a responsibility to respond factually with what our involvement, if any involvement, in that is. Now, I know both the Anchorage Chamber and NGLCC and many chambers around the country are nonpartisan. That doesn't always mean we are non-political. Sometimes we have to be in there fighting for the issues that are important to small businesses. So I would just say, listen to what this chamber is putting out. Know that this chamber is representing your issues. And if you have real concerns, I think you should bring them up to the leadership of this organization or any other that you belong to.
And just a note, although the Anchorage Chamber is a member of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, we are strictly nonpartisan. And so that's a little bit different than the U.S. Chamber. We do not get involved in political races and some of the issues they do. So there is already a difference. And I'm just very proud that we're nonpartisan. One last question, Justin. How can vendors in the community advertise or network with your chamber members?
Well, I guess there's two answers to that, or I'll answer that question two ways. If you're an LGBT-owned company, 51% owned, operated, and controlled by an LGBT person or persons, you should get certified. And we certify companies that are majority LGBT-owned. We work with 140 corporations that want to do business with you, not despite the fact that you're gay, but because you are LGBT, like they do with women, ethnic minorities, service-disabled veterans. They find LGBT companies to be a vibrant part of their corporate fabric, and they want to work with you. If you are an allied company that wants to work with our members or network with one of our 32 affiliate chambers in the U.S. or our 14 international, you should see Sam McClure, and she can help connect you with those individuals.
Go right ahead, Judith.
So one thing I just would like to add about that whole supplier diversity, it is a huge piece of the business in corporate America. And I will just give you an example. Once a diverse business becomes certified, we can add them to a master list within our Wells Fargo, you know, TeamWorks, which is our homepage, if you will, for employees. And let's say I am catering a lunch for something. I can actually go to caterers and it will identify those diverse businesses in the community who is a diverse supplier. And when I purchase from them, it will automatically help Wells Fargo and any other corporation that has this type of supplier diversity goal to move the needle. And we have to move the needle, and because our demographic in the United States is changing. So again, it's smart business.
Now, for the straight white guy in the audience, I don't want to leave you out either. straight white guys, maybe there's several. I'm just saying we're talking about diversity and women and ethnic minorities and LGBT. You know, if you are a prime contractor to one of these companies or you own your own business, instituting your own internal diverse supplier program really is a benefit when you're going in to bid on new business. Prime example is the fact that last week, I don't even remember what week it is, I was in San Francisco 2 weeks ago at the Transbay project. It's a $4 billion federal, state, local transportation project. 22% of that has to be spent with small businesses. We did our first ever LGBT business outreach to find LGBT suppliers. The top three construction firms are now members and looking to utilize LGBT suppliers, because it helps with competitive advantage. It shows that a portion of what you anticipate being paid for in that contract is being spent with a diverse supplier. And I'm not saying it just needs to be LGBT, but you should implement something for women, ethnic minorities, service disabled veterans, people with disabilities, all of those sorts of things.
Thank you. And a couple of minutes left. I just have one more question. And Bill, I think this sounds like it's up your way. Many LGBT owned businesses are expanding and growing. How will Anchorage attract them?
Well, that's a very long answer to that question. But I think one of the key things we have to do is we have to provide an environment for the overall business community that all businesses can flourish in and address issues that deal with the points that we're fighting right now in terms of a very tight labor force. We're down to 4.8% unemployment. We are hearing more and more complaints about the lack of available candidates for all levels of employment, whether it's entry-level service industry or highly skilled professional and everything in between. And the challenges that we face in housing, the challenges in terms of the cost of housing, the fact that Anchorage in the current cost of living index survey ranks 20th in the United States out of the 302 cities that participate in that survey, ranks 20th most expensive city to live in the United States. Those are issues. But also the cultural elements, the community elements like great outdoors, great indoors, all of those things come together to be able to attract and retain workforce. And a community that maintains its diversity, because diversity can't be just taken for granted. It requires constant maintenance. It requires constant input, and it requires constant conversation, not at a high pitch, but it's something that we have to be situationally aware of and working on a daily basis to maintain that level of diversity that we currently enjoy and to always seek those little incremental improvements that we can add to it. So I think all of that comes together in terms of being able to attract business investment in our community, whether it's locally grown or from outside of Anchorage in Alaska.
Thanks, Mel. Okay. Thank you very much. Can we get a round of applause for our head table? Thank you.
You're listening to Addressing Alaskans with Justin Nelson, president of the National Gay and Lesbian Chamber of Commerce. Justin was joined on stage by Bill Popp, president of the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation, and Judith Crotty, vice president and regional community development manager for Wells Fargo Bank, who also assisted in responding to questions from the audience. Addressing Alaskans is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. The music is by Patrick Lee. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. To let us know about an upcoming community event that you would like to hear on Addressing Alaskans, just go to alaskapublic.org and click on Contact Us at the bottom of the page. Learn more about Addressing Alaskans and listen online anytime at alaskapublic.org. For KSKA, I'm Kristen Platt. Thanks for listening.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.